The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, isn't this appropriate? We have spring equinox and snow. I thought, couldn't be more perfect. Couldn't be more perfect. I came across a quote by Great Master Dogen. This was from a calendar that Pine Mountain Buddhist Temple put out in 2007, for any of you that might have that. The true person, and true person is capitalized, the true person is not anyone in particular, but like the deep blue color of the limitless sky, it is everyone, everywhere in the world. We're going to explore some ways that we can look at being a true person. And I think it's an appropriate quote for this ceremony, because we are all to one degree or another hungry ghosts. For myself, it took a very, very, very long time to recognize that. Hungry ghosts have everything they need, and they can't take it in. And that's like many of us. We have everything we need, but one, we can't take it in. And since we can't take it in, then we want more. It's also, I think, an appropriate time to look at what it means to be a true person, because it is the spring equinox. And being of a somewhat curious mind and trying to restrain my curiosity, but knowing that there was someone here that would want to know that this is not actually the spring equinox today. It doesn't happen until tomorrow. The spring equinox is March 19th at 10:15 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And it's the date in the Northern Hemisphere when day and night are nearly the same length and the center of the and the sun crosses a celestial equator. So that's your fact for the day. It seems to me a good time to cast a glance backward in reflection to see what we might learn from what has gone before in the past season, in the winter of darkness and cold, to give a little thought to how we might take those reflections into the coming days and months of this new spring season, because it is getting lighter, it is getting warmer, in spite of today's cold and snow, but spring is on the way. Some of you may remember that last December, I took a fall and fractured my femur, and it was quite a surprise to me, because I walk on that same ground. I was walking in the Central Garden on uneven ground, but that probably wasn't the reason. It was probably because I was not being mindful. But the whole episode was quite painful. It was very expensive. Hospital bills are enormous these days, even for 24-hour stays. And it necessitated a lot of other monks having to take time to take care of me. But it did give me time to think about this and to sit still. And I learned patience, which is something I can learn a lot about. But all in all, it was a very difficult time, and it puzzled me because I've had some recent experience in surgical, post-surgical recovery and rehabilitation on a personal level, but even so, it was a very difficult time. And after a month or so, when I began to recognize how difficult it really was, I began to ask myself, what is there for me to learn here? There was something I wasn't seeing, something I wasn't getting. Well, besides the obvious of learning anew the practice of patience and gratitude, I have come to feel over the years that there's a gift offered to us in every situation, in which we find ourselves, and especially a painful situation. There's a spiritual lesson, if you want to call it that. But even so, I was surprised, quite surprised, when what came up was walking on uneven ground. And so we're going to talk a little bit about choosing to walk on uneven ground, because we all do that. I had chosen to walk on the uneven ground that afternoon, and the consequences should not have surprised me. But what happened afterwards did. And I'm going to give you a very, very brief synopsis of the lead-in to the illumination, if you will, that we all choose to walk on uneven ground. So after a while, my kind surgeon said, okay, you can start physical therapy, which I am a big believer in, and I would have started the next day, but I wasn't allowed to. So I went into the wellness center and saw this really wonderful physical therapist, and she said to me, so I see you have fallen. And I said, yes, I broke my femur. And then she said, and? I said, well, I actually had fallen a few weeks before, but I didn't break anything. So she raised her eyebrow at that. And she said, yes. And then I said, and then I fell a couple of years ago in the maintenance building in the dark when I tripped over the lumber and fractured my shoulder, and the second eyebrow went up. And I was glad I didn't have any more breaks to report, because we were running out of eyebrows at that point. She had a look of intense amazement, and she looked me straight in the face and said, you need to work on balance. And I was shocked, because I've never thought of myself as an unbalanced person or an imbalanced person. I mean, I did dance, and I did yoga, and I do Tai Chi, and etc. She looked at me again, and she said, you need to work on balance. And I think even at the time she said it, I knew that there was something under that, that she meant I needed to work on balance from a physical therapy standpoint. She said, you need to work on balance, and you need to work on flexibility, and you need to work on strengthening. So that's what I've been doing. I've been on a stationary bike and a little treadmill, and I do exercises on the floor and exercises standing up, and I progressed from a wheelchair to a walker to crutches to a cane, and now just my own two legs. And I'm grateful for that. In fact, I'm pretty amazed that the healing went so well. But I've also been looking at my daily life and at my religious practice. And the question that came up was, how does balance and flexibility and strength relate to my daily life? And I saw this remarkable similarity between physical therapy, or the physical therapy that I was doing, and my religious practice. And when I think about it, it shouldn't have come as any surprise, because our lives aren't compartmentalized like that. There's not my religious practice and then my physical therapy. You know, it's all one. This is what I saw when I looked at what I was doing in physical therapy. I thought, well, you have to have faith, don't you? You have to have faith that these exercises will actually help. Okay, I had faith that those exercises would help. And then you have to trust that she knows what she's teaching, which seemed obvious to me. And from a number of reliable resources for whom she has also helped. So there was faith and there was trust. And then there's the confidence that I can do this. Even at my advanced age and decrepitude, that I can still do these exercises and I can still regain some semblance of mobility. So faith, trust, and confidence. And I thought, that's interesting, isn't it? Faith, trust, and confidence are hallmarks of our Buddhist training. You could give innumerable Dharma talks on faith, trust, and confidence. And I was thinking about that, faith, trust, and confidence, faith, trust, and confidence. And then what came up for me is that the uneven ground, the physical uneven ground that I walked on that may have contributed to my fall, but we all walk on uneven ground. We all walk on uneven ground because it's all around us. We're always walking on uneven ground because there is always anicca, anatta, and dukkha. There's impermanence, there's no self, and there's suffering or unsatisfactoriness. And all of those things provide the ups and downs of our daily life. They provide us with bumps as we go along. They provide us with valleys that we fall into. They provide us with ledges that we stand on and peer down and say, oh my goodness, there's no place to go. And they provide bumps that we stub our toes on. So we are always walking on uneven ground because we don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. And when we commit ourselves to Buddhist training, we make that choice. I think we make it subconsciously, if we will. I'm not sure when I started reading Buddhism and when I first came to the Abbey and when I first practiced meditation, I'm not sure that if I knew what I was getting into, that I would have continued. So maybe it's a good thing that I didn't. But we choose to walk on uneven ground in order to see those places within ourselves that need a good spring house cleaning, or a minor repair, or maybe even a major repair. That's the commitment we make when we take up Buddhist training. We commit ourselves to change. Change is never, at least in my experience, change is never comfortable. But change is what we have to do if we are truly to train as Buddhist. So what is this uneven ground that we walk on, that we walk through as Buddhists? Anger is uneven ground. The delusions that we carry around about what's real and what's not real. Greed. Greed in all its big forms and greed in all its little forms. I'm always surprised, although I don't know why I should be. We have some very good baker monks, and so we are treated with some lovely delicacies, and our kind congregation brings us lovely delicacies, and things are passed around on a tray, and my eye either goes to the biggest cookie or the fattest cookie or the piece of cake that looks absolutely the best. And even if it's in the middle of the plate and I have to hold up my sleeve in order to get to it, that's what I go for. And I do it and then I think, how long have I been training? and sometimes in my better moments, I close my eyes and say, reach for the one that's closest. And then I have to live with the disappointment that it's not the fattest or the biggest. But I don't seem to have died from that practice. Greed is with us all the time. Delusion is with us all the time. Anger and hatred and ill will and resentment and attachment and resistance and unwillingness and willfulness. That's the uneven ground of our daily life. and we choose to walk that uneven ground so that we can train ourselves to help other beings. And that's the other aspect of this festival of the autumn equinox, the feeding of the hungry ghost, is to help all beings. And yet, it seems to be somewhat impossible to help all beings unless we're able to help ourselves. So what we have to do is look seriously at cleaning up our karma. And we have to think of things like reaching for that biggest or fattest cookie as being a little bit more than just greed. Is there some karma here that could be cleaned up if I were to take this seriously? And that's what we need to do. We need to take our Buddhist training seriously. So if that's the uneven ground that we walk on, what's the even ground? Because we all know that if there's uneven ground, there's also even ground. And it seems to me, going back to, oh yes, faith, trust, and confidence, that faith and trust and confidence are the even ground. All the underpinnings of our training, all the underpinnings of the Dharma that we read, the Dharma that we hear, and the Dharma that's all around us. The precepts, all of our precepts, the Eightfold Path, meditation, mindfulness, understanding the Four Noble Truths, these constitute the even ground of our training. This is what supports us and sustains us, so that when we walk on uneven ground, we have all of the walking aids that we need. We don't need crutches and canes. We don't need wheelchairs, although as we get older and more decrepit, we will all need some of those. But basically, all we need to walk on uneven ground is faith and trust and what we know about Buddhist practice, keeping the precepts. Am I really walking the Eightfold Path? What does it mean? What does no self mean? These are the things that we need to look at. And in doing that, in being willing to look, we choose discomfort over comfort. Because looking at ourselves, unless you're incredibly different than I am, looking at myself is never comfortable. Trying to change the way I speak to people, trying to change my body language, trying to change my behavior, trying to not get caught up in some of the thoughts that I have, it's uncomfortable. But we choose discomfort over comfort. We choose the unknown over the familiar. Things that are comfortable for us are familiar. Things that are uncomfortable for us are often unknowns. That's what we choose as Buddhists. We're willing to say, I can step out from something that I know and something that I'm comfortable with. I can look at this precept on do not being proud of yourself and devalue others, and I can say, does this apply to me in any way? And when I get past the initial, no, of course not, then I can look a little further and I can see, well, actually it does. Actually it does. What can I do about it? That's not comfortable, but it's walking on an even ground so that we can help other beings. And within all of this, we choose the simple, which is meditation, following the precepts. But it's exceedingly difficult. I've long come to the conclusion that the word simple doesn't mean it's easy. Because for me, training has always been exceedingly difficult. There have been some gloriously smooth times, but they have never lasted very long. And I've often found myself in trouble again because I thought, oh yes, I know what I'm doing and I know where I'm going. And it seems like the minute I do that, I go splat. Why do we choose discomfort over comfort? Why are we willing to go into the unknown as Buddhists? Because the inherent nature of the practice and study of the precepts, the inherent nature of meditation is cleansing our karma. Now, someone may have told me that when I started training a number of years ago, but I certainly didn't remember it enough that I got scared. So I'm very grateful that I didn't remember it. Because cleansing our karma seems like such an enormous task. It seems like I have to know a lot. And it's kind of beyond me sometimes. What in the world does that all mean? But cleansing our karma means that every day, if we take our practice seriously, we are called upon to make innumerable decisions to do something about the messy bits. And sometimes the messy bits are little, like the chocolate cookie or the piece of cake. And sometimes the messy bits are bigger. Those aspects of our body, speech, and mind that cause suffering for ourselves and others. And the only way we're going to know if we're causing suffering for ourselves and others is to pay attention to what we say, and pay attention to what we do, and pay attention to what we think. So choosing to walk this uneven ground, venturing into the unknown, I think is only doable when we take refuge in that which is greater than ourselves, when we truly find out what it means for ourselves to take refuge in the Buddha and take refuge in the Dharma and take refuge in the Sangha. We say that over and over and over. But how much time do you spend each day asking yourself, well, I'm going to take refuge in the Buddha today. What does that mean? Or, I'm going to take refuge in the Dharma. Where do I start? I'm going to take refuge in the Sangha. How do I go about this? So, we go about it by being willing to recognize our mistakes, being willing to look deeply within ourselves. And we will fall down. We will make mistakes. So what helps us to avoid the falls? What helps us to lessen the mistakes? I went back to my physical therapy for the answer to that, which has provided me with immeasurable help. And I thought, what helps to avoid falls on a physical basis? Well, balance and flexibility and strength. And when you look up the definition of those, it's really interesting because it goes beyond the physical. And the definition that seemed to speak to me for balance was emotional and physical equilibrium. And we talk a lot in Buddhism about equilibrium, but we don't usually think of it as balance. Flexibility, one definition is responsive to change, adaptable. Oh, responsive to change, adaptable. Does that mean that I have to look at things with an eye to not having my own way all the time? Do I have to recognize that this has changed from the last time we did that, and we're doing it a different way. Oh, but it's not my way. Well, but it's a good way. Am I willing to do that? Can I adapt? Strength obviously can mean physical power, but it's also the power of resisting stress or strain. Firmness of will, firmness of character, firmness of mind, firmness of purpose, moral courage. And I thought, isn't that lovely? There's so much Buddha's teaching in that one definition. Because what happens when we practice compassion? We're willing to let someone else's suffering take a greater role in our concern than our own. That's moral courage. Firmness of will, deciding that I really am going to keep that precept about not speaking against others. Firmness of will. So it seemed to me that if I really wanted to work on balance in my everyday life, not just the balance with physical therapy, but true balance in my everyday life, then I had to think, where do I start? And I thought, well, what provides equilibrium? And what came up was generosity. Being willing to have things not go my way all the time. You know, we think of generosity as giving alms, we think of generosity as giving to people. And generosity is really opening up ourselves to whatever needs to be done in the present moment. Sympathetic joy, being glad for someone else's good fortune. Not complaining, because complaining takes us into the opposites. And opposites result in being in imbalance. If you're too far on one side or too far on the other, you're imbalanced. Balance is that middle way. Does that sound familiar? The middle way in Buddhism, balance. Flexibility, responsive to change and being adaptable. I think you could put humility in there, seen from a different perspective. Reverend Master Jiyu would talk about the kaleidoscopic mind, being flexible, going beyond the opposites, looking for that middle or third position. And I thought, oh dear, I'm going to have to give up my highly cherished opinions. All those opinions that I've carried around all these years that I know to be right and correct and helpful to everyone else, I may have to give some of them up. Well, I think probably by the time I die, I'm going to have to give up all of them, or at least the attachment to them. But I'm happy to work on just a few at a time. Strength. Resisting stress or strain, firmness of will, firmness of mind, moral courage. How do we get that strength? Patience. Practice patience. What was it that in a scripture the Buddha said that's the highest attribute, is the practice of patience? I'm still working on it. And I often stop to think with a little bit of a chuckle every time I have an injury where I have to submit to what other people want to do and I have to ask for help, I learn patience. And I'm hoping that I learn it fairly quickly because I only have one joint left that hasn't been injured. So... it's kind of hard on my body if part of the reason for all of this is learning patience. And, you know, to be truthful, if this is what it takes, it's a small price to pay, a very, very small price to pay to learn patience and to learn gratitude. When you're in a position where you can't do very much for yourself and you have to rely on other people, you learn a lot of gratitude. You learn how much it takes for someone to, quote, take care of you. And I think that for many of us in that situation, our thoughts go ahead a few years to, when I'm dying, chances are I'm not going to be able to get my own food and do my exercises and go to the bathroom. You know, there's lots of these things that I take for granted I'm not going to be able to do. And I can either accept the help with impatience and criticism, or I can accept the help that's offered with gratitude. And I know for myself, I'm going to have to learn that before I get to that point. It's too late then. I have to learn it now. We develop strength through meditation, through a daily practice of meditation, through being willing to just sit. And along with that comes recognizing that if we don't do that, we need to ask ourselves, why am I not doing that? What is preventing me from having a daily practice of meditation? Mindfulness in our everyday life, really paying attention to what we're doing and really looking at the consequences of what we're doing. We need to learn to take our meditation off the cushion into our daily life. Many, many years ago, way before I became a monk, I had a wonderful little, it's like the front of a greeting card. It was about 8 inches long and 3 or 4 inches wide. Had a sketch on it of what I think of as, and I don't know where this is true, typically Chinese with mountains and clouds and some pine trees and a little path. And at the top of it, it said, the way in is the way out. And at the bottom of it, it said, the way out is the way in. And that just really spoke to my heart. But my brain couldn't figure it out at all. It just didn't make any sense to me. Well, I kept that for a very long time. I think I finally let it go when I came to the monastery, the little card. But I kept that saying in my mind, the way in is the way out, and the way out is the way in. And then, when we have a little Dharma study group here at the Abbey, and we were looking at Roar the Tigress, Volume 1, and on page, I was reading this late at night in my room, and at the bottom of page 109, Reverend Master Jiyu says, studying and following a way of life based on enlightened action, even though we do it imperfectly, is the other foundation of Zen alongside meditation. The latter brings us to the truth from the inside out. The former brings us to the truth from the outside in. And I thought, oh, well, sometimes answers to questions take 30 years, and sometimes we get them sooner. But that was the answer that I was seeking. That was what I needed to know. That there are really, that's the balance. The balance is doing the inside work, and the balance is doing the outside work. And you can't just do one. The way in is the way out, and the way out is the way in. So, do I have to wait until I'm enlightened to act enlightened? I mean, I could be dead by then, right? It's going to happen. It's not too far off in the future. I think when we choose to live an ordinary daily life, right now, in the present moment, when we take our meditation into our daily life, that's the best way I know of taking Reverend Master Chiyu's advice. And she further talks about, this is a wonderful chapter for any of you that have this book, and it's chapter 3, it's how to live the life of Buddha. And I thought, if I read no other chapter in this book, that's the chapter I would read. It's chapter 3, How to Live the Life of Buddha. Hermit Master Chu talks about looking closely and deeply at the consequences of what we do, that we have to take the responsibility for looking at our consequences. She says you can do anything you wish as long as it's within enlightened action. And she sums this up. I'm not going to read all the references to you, but she sums this up by saying, wonderful practice, magnificent meditation. I suppose you could say, this is quoting Reverend Master Chu, practice what you preach, but that's not really it. When you meditate, you must live up to that meditation, and you must live up to that which meditation implies, which is true faith and genuinely true responsibility. This is for adults. She often used the word spiritual adults. So if we are going to have balance and flexibility and strength in our daily life, we have to look at the consequences of each and everything that we do, and each and every thought that we have, and each and everything that we say. And I find that pretty daunting. However, I think it's worth doing. It helps when we can recognize that in doing that, we need to restrain our little self, and we need to open our mind to being a true person that is one with everything and that is not anything in particular. So I came up because I like lists and I like itemizing things. So I came up with a few tips, if you will, or things that have at least helped me to nourish balance and flexibility and strength in my daily life. I'm going to let you sort out the physical part, because I'm not a physical therapist, but I can recommend a very good one to you. But this is what I came up with. Every once in a while, take a stop, look, and listen break. Now, it's nice to do that at least once a day, but if you can't do that, try to select a day of the week or an event that is uncomfortable for you, a repetitive event that doesn't sit very well, a time or circumstance that always seems particularly troubling. And during that stop, look, and listen break, pay attention to what your body is saying to you. Pay attention to what your body is saying to other people. Pay attention to what your speech is saying. And pay attention to what your mind is nattering on about. I have a very active mind. I think it feels that if it doesn't exercise itself all the time, it's just going to disappear. But anyway, I have to really pay attention to it, and I have to really often say, you can calm down now. I so much liked Reverend Master Daizui's simile, if that's the right word, to the mind being on a hamster wheel, having a hamster in one of those things. And, you know, someone gave him, made a little wheel for him on a very nice little piece of wood, and I think they may have put on it that nice saying, everyday mind is the way. But he had it on his desk, and every time I would go in to see him, there would be the wheel. And it was really wonderful. That was my stop, look, and listen break, to take a deep breath, say the homages, and to ask myself, is what I'm going to ask him a good question? Is what I'm going to ask him to talk about, is this a good time to do this? Because I tend to be a little impetuous sometimes, and if something's important to me, I know it's important to other people, and we can stop everything and do it right now. But, you know, that's actually not the case. A lot of things that are important to me aren't at all important to other people. Came as quite a shock to find that out. I think also we can stop and ask ourselves frequently, what are the consequences of what I'm about to do? What are the consequences of what I'm about to say? Or what I'm thinking at this very moment? If I continue on with my mind going along the way it is, what's going to be the consequence of this? And sometimes I have to just say, sit. The way that you would if you were a good dog trainer and had compassion for your dog, sit. Sometimes if my mind doesn't want to sit, I just say, stop. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think another thing I found helpful is to ask myself, am I doing the very best that I can do in this situation right here and right now? That was one of the early teachings that I learned when I first came to the Abbey back in 1982, was do the best you can. That's what Reverend Master Chi would say, was do the best you can. And there's a second part to that. It's either the small print or it's unspoken. But the second part to that is, yes, I'm doing the best I can I do a little better? Can I do just a little bit better, if not this time, then next time? I think it is helpful to not be completely satisfied, to recognize that the best that I could do yesterday may not be the best that I can do today. There may be something better that I can do today. So when we ask ourselves, am I doing the very best that I can, take a minute and pause and see if you can do a little bit better. It's been helpful to ask myself, where am I looking from? I'm in this situation. Which is uncomfortable. I'm talking to this person. Conversation is not going well. Where am I looking from? What is my view? We can only see things from our own perspective. And when we realize that, we can then say, I'm going to move back a little bit so I can get a bigger picture. Reverend Master Daishin Morgan gave, for me, a very inspiring series of lectures. It was actually out of Sagaki a number of years ago when I was at Parasol. And he was talking about big picture, little picture. And the little picture is our reality. It's what we see, what we believe in, what we believe about ourselves, what we believe about other people. But there's a bigger picture. And the analogy he used was what an incredible effect it had on the first first excursion to the moon when the NASA photographs came back, and we looked at that blue-green ball with white on it, and that was our planet, and no one had ever seen that before, and it changed the way people thought. When we as Buddhist trainees can step back and say, is what I'm seeing true reality? How much of my self is getting in the way? We can change the way we see things. We can ask ourselves, am I taking time to meditate on a consistent basis? Am I taking time to be mindful in my daily life? And if the answer isn't a wholehearted yes, then we have to ask ourselves, what's getting in the way? What's getting in the way of my meditation? What's getting in the way of my mindfulness? And lastly, I have found that it helps to ask myself, was expressing gratitude part of my life today? Did I say thank you to someone? Did I write a thank you note? Did I stop to pick up something that someone else dropped so they didn't have to do that? There are innumerable ways of expressing our gratitude. Unless we can do it in our daily life, it's not part of our practice. I was quite pleased when I came across this little news item in a State Farm newsletter, and it said, "Have you thanked someone today?" And I thought, that's kind of interesting in a State Farm newsletter, because usually their little news items are about how to protect your home from burglars and how to make sure that your pipes don't freeze and etc. I'll read you a little bit of it. "People help others out all the time, from the little everyday times to the couldn't have done it without you times. But in today's fast-paced world, how often do you say or hear thank you? The website thanksforbeingthere.com, sponsored by State Farm, makes it easy to acknowledge and celebrate those who have been there for you." So in the social networking world, and then it proceeds to tell you, you can write a message, you can have a post, a photo there, you can let people know it's there, you can send it to different people, etc. Well, I try to minimize my time on the computer, so I'm not going to take advantage of that website. But I thought it was truly a heartening thing to think that out there is a website where we can say thank you to people. But I prefer to do it on a more personal basis. And it helps me at the end of the day to have a little period of reflection and to be able to say, who do I need to express my gratitude to that I didn't today? Did something happen somewhere that I can express gratitude for, whether it happened to me personally or whether it happened to me globally? Those are the things that have helped me to nourish balance and flexibility and strength. I think those, when we think about that, and we think about our Buddhist training, that's when we can truly make that quote from Dogen reflect on us and off of us to other people. So I'd like to close by reading that again. "The true person is not anyone in particular, but like the deep blue color of the limitless sky, it is everyone, everywhere in the world." Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.